So in this talk, I will talk about the results I obtained in my PhD thesis, and it was about derived analytic geometry. So the plan of the talk will be the following. I will start by giving some quick motivation for derived analytic geometry. Then I will try to explain the main ideas behind the foundational background we need to deal with derived analytic geometry. And then I will talk about the main theorem I obtained so far, which are mainly the derived version of GAGA theorems, so derived algebraic geometry versus derived analytic, and the existence of the analytic cotangent complex and the related analytic deformation theory. And then I will complete the talk by discussing a few near future direction. So many of the results I will talk about are already available on the archive. The title and the archive number are written there. And some of the results I will discuss are joint with Tony UAU. Okay, so let me start with motivations. And before giving motivation, let me be a bit more precise what I mean about with the derived analytic geometry. So when I say analytic geometry, I mean either complex analytic geometry or non-Archimedean analytic geometry. And when I say non-Archimedean analytic geometry, I mean Berkovich spaces. So the derived version of Berkovich spaces. And when I say derived geometry, as everyone here knows, I mean in the sense of Toen-Vezzosi and of Lurie. Okay, so as for the motivation, there are mainly two motivations for derived analytic geometry that I'm aware of. The first on the complex analytic side is non-abelian odd theory, and the second one on the k-analytic side is a non-Archimedean mirror symmetry. So I mean, these are joint projects, these are ongoing projects, long-term projects, so I will just explain very briefly what are the relevant problems here, but I won't deepen too much the discussion. So for non-abelian odd theory, the question is how to define a good notion of mixed odd structure on a suitable Artin stack, algebraic Artin stack, and then to show that this property of having a mixed odd structure is stable under taking mapping stack with a suitable, for example, smooth proper algebraic variety over C X. So we can interpret the odd filtration just as a geometrical condition, as a stack living over the quotient stack GA mod GM. But there is a more subtle problem, which is the definition of the weight filtration. And experts on this topic are convinced that the correct way of interpreting the weight filtration is a formal filtration. So this on one side forces us to consider the mapping stack as a derived mapping stack, but then if we want to recover the integral structure, we need a version of Simpson Riemann-Hilbert correspondence. So this correspondence leaves just in the analytic world. So we need a machinery to deal with analytification of derived Artin stacks. So this problem is addressed in my thesis, and I will survey it in this talk. And on the other side, for the non-Archimedean derived analytic geometry, there is a very general program sketched by Koncevich and Seubermann, saying that if we want to construct a mirror variety, okay, of course we need to solve a lot of enumerative problems on the manifold we want to construct the mirror of. And the insight of Koncevich and Seubermann and of other people is that this problem might be easier in the non-Archimedean setting. And in fact, for example, some of these enumerative problems we need to solve can be recast in the non-Archimedean setting sometimes as a problem of counting stable maps. So, this is the background. And then if we want to count and to define the enumerative invariant, for example, Gromov-Witten invariants in the non-Archimedean setting, we need to proceed precisely as in algebraic geometry. So the moduli stack of genus zero curves with unmarked point is not smooth in the non-Archimedean setting as well. So we need to find the right version of that in order to use the right structure shift to construct the virtual classes needed to define the invariant. So it's already known, because my collaborator proved it, that there is a non-Archimedean version of this moduli stack underived. And if we want to construct the derived enhancement of the derived enhancement of this, we will need some version of Lurie representability theorem in the analytic setting. This is actually a theorem. We proved it, and I will survey it at the end of the talk. Okay. So any questions so far? Okay. So let me start with the foundational material. So. What does a derived analytic space look like? And to understand the final definition that we are using, let me start with a wrong guess. So we know that it's possible to define derived spaces as pairs, like infinity topos plus sheaf of simplicial algebras. And on the other side, we know that classically, the category of complex analytic spaces is just a full subcategory of locally ring spaces. And the same is true in the non-Archimedean setting. This is something we had to prove with Tony in our joint work. So one first guess would be, let's try to define the category of derived analytic spaces as a full subcategory of simplicially ringed infinity topoi. I mean, based on this consideration, it might be reasonable. So let's try to give a definition. So with this idea in mind, a derived analytic space would be a pair, X O X, where X is an infinity topos. In fact, let's just stick with the infinity topos of sheaves on a complex analytic space or on the quasi-etal site of a Berkovich space. And OX would be just a sheaf of simplicial algebras, and then we require some compatibility. We will, X is the sheaf of the topos of sheaves on a complex analytic space, then we have, in particular, a sheaf of holomorphic function that I denote O straight X. And we would be asking that the truncation of our derived structure sheaf is just a sheaf of usual holomorphic function. And then we would be asking that every pi I is a coherent sheaf over OX. Yes, so let's take this definition. And I say that there are problems with this definition. So there are essentially three different ways of explaining the problem arising with this definition. They are more or less all equivalent. So the first way of saying it is that associated to this notion of derived space, there is an intrinsic notion of deformation theory. And this is not the deformation theory we expect, in a sense that I will make precise in a while. But let's say that, for example, the cotangent complex we would get from this definition is way too big and doesn't classify real analytic deformation of analytic spaces inside the category of classical analytic spaces. Another way of saying this is just that Lurie representability theorem fail in a trivial way, like even the easy direction when we ask geometric stacks to satisfy, the easy direction says that every geometric stack satisfies a couple of conditions that I will review at the end. One of them trivially fail. I mean, a representable stack wouldn't be infinitesimally Cartesian. And finally, the last way of saying it is that the infinity category of such objects is not closed under push-out along a closed immersion, which is closely related to the first two conditions. So let me explain why the third property fail. So let C be the infinity category of such derived analytic spaces in the wrong sense. And we consider the following construction. So we start with a classical complex analytic space with a coherent sheaf on it. And we consider the split square zero extension by F shifted by one. So the pi zero of this is just OX, and pi one is just F. So this split square zero extension is really an object in C. So it's really a derived analytic space in this wrong sense. And if we take any section of the canonical projection, by which I mean any derived derivation with values in F shifted by one, then this is a morphism in C. And I could consider this push out. Now, these two maps are closed immersion. So I would expect that the object to be in C. However, this object is discrete by construction. So the question is essentially a classical one. And there is a counterexample by Gabber.
Can you explain what a discrete coherent sheaf is? Hmm? What is a discrete coherent sheaf?
Oh, I just mean concentrate, not a complex.
Ah, not
just a usual coherent sheaf. Coherent. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so the point is that the structure sheaf of this extension is just a square zero extension of the structure sheaf OX. And in fact, any square zero extension of OX arises via this construction. And there is an example of a square zero extension of OX such that the resulting space is not a complex analytic space by Gabber. So this is a way of seeing that this category C is not the good one. So let's try to understand what's the problem with this definition. As I was saying, the problem is that there is a square zero extension of OX, which doesn't give rise to a complex analytic space. And such a square zero extension are all classified by the cotangent the algebraic cotangent complex of the structure sheaf. And the point is that this object is way too big. So ideally, morally, what we want is a smaller object, something like classifying the derivation that I'm considering in this definition. So this is just an underwrite version. But just to give the idea, I think it's useful. So if we start with a complex analytic space and a coherent sheaf on X, then we can consider to say that we can say that an analytic derivation is an usual derivation, which furthermore satisfies this equation for every analytic function from the complex from the analytic line to itself. So note that when f is a polynomial function, it's just implied by Leibniz rule. But if f is a real, an analytic function with infinitely many terms in the Taylor development, this doesn't follow, and it has to be asked. And this is precisely the difference between the complex, the analytic cotangent complex, and the algebraic one.
You have your analytic function to have domain the entirety of A1, or could it be some open subset in C, let's say?
I didn't get the question. Sorry.
Your analytic function, does it have to be defined on all of A1?
No, no, no.
It or can you have a holomorphic function defined on an open set?
I will go over that quite soon, but. I mean, it depends on the object X. I mean, here, yeah. If I see X as a function defined over the complex analytic space, it has an image, and then the domain of the function has to contain the image of this element. I mean, just that.
Does it follow from this definition?
Yeah, it will follow.
Okay.
I will show that there exists an analytic cotangent complex, and its pi zero is precisely given by this formula, it classifying objects of this shape.
On a related note, is it clear that it's enough to consider one x here and not y?
No, in fact, one has to consider all n.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean all holomorphic functions from an open subset of an to a1. I will see it. I will explain it a little bit. yeah. So the way we want to do it is to enhance the structure sheaf and to add on it an analytic structure, extra analytic structure. So the question becomes how to impose this extra analytic structure. And as far as I know, there are essentially two different ways of addressing the problem. So the first one is to interpret OX as a sheaf of simplicial, for example, in Banach algebras. And this is an approach that has been taken by James Walbridge, Ben Bassin, and Kremnitzer. And, well, he's not here, but I guess on Friday he will tell us a bit more on his approach, Ben Bassin. And then there is the second approach taken by, I mean, the first one to suggest it was Jacob Lurie, and then I adopted it in my thesis, and with Tony Yu, we are using it in founding the in constructing the derived Berkovich spaces, which is we consider the structure sheaf as a sheaf of simplicial algebras, but endowed with an extra axiomatic functional calculus. So let me review what I mean with the functional calculus. So let's start with a commutative Banach algebra over C. We fix an element in A. We see this element as a function from polynomials to A. And for any open subset of C, we can consider holomorphic functions, and we can consider, I mean, polynomials as a holomorphic function defined over the whole plane, and we can restrict them to the open subset. And then we can ask whether this lifting problem has a solution. So classically, there is a very well understood answer to this question. So when does the problem have a solution? So if we consider the Galfan transform of A, we just pick a closed maximal ideal in A, and then we get a continuous function from this topological space to C. We take its image, we call it the spectrum of the element A, just this image. And then the problem has a solution precisely when the open subset contains the image of this function. So now you can start just with, instead of starting with the Banach algebra, you can just start with a complex a commutative algebra, and you can ask whether you can define axiomatically a functional calculus for it. And if you think what it means that precisely for every open subset of Cn, we should give a subset of element in An, which is morally the set of elements where the holomorphic function defined over U converge. So I pick a holomorphic function defined over U. I can think of it as a if U, for example, is a disk, I can think of it as a power series, and I can substitute to the variable the element, an element in A of U. And if A was a Banach algebra, I could check whether this series that I get converges or not. Here, I'm just giving it axiomatically without putting any topology on A. So how to make it a bit more precise, this definition, one introduces the category of all open subset of Cn with holomorphic function between them. And then the condition I was describing just become I get a functor from this category to set. And of course, I want A of C, O of C to be the algebra I started with. So Yeah. It will be a product preserving function. I mean, here I'm just describing this this condition. I just want to put emphasis on functoriality, and then and I'm asking that A is a commutative algebra on its own. Now the real definition will be product preserving functor with some extra condition also. I just give it in the next slide.
There is a notion of C infinity ring.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of analytic version, which I think we call analytic rings. Are they the same thing?
They are related. There is a forgetful functor from there will be a forgetful functor from derived complex analytic spaces to derived C infinity rings. I mean derived C infinity manifolds.
Analytic rings.
Yeah.
Are they the same thing as these?
Yes. Well, I mean, I will give it, not as this as is written there, as the definition I will give in the next slide.
Will that functor be fully faithful?
I hope not. I mean, because you will have C infinity functions that are not holomorphic.
Oh, sorry, you said C infinity. No, replace C infinity by analytic.
Then I don't get the question.
I think they're the same thing.
Okay, wrong. I see.
What's the question? I mean.
The axiomatic holomorphic functional calculuses are the same thing as analytic rings.
I mean, I would define analytic rings in this way. So for me, yes. I mean, they are the same category. How do you want to define analytic rings?
Well,
There are some synthetic differential geometers have a literature on them.
But for Rn?
No, for Ctn.
For Cn?
Yeah, there is a holomorphic version.
Yeah. Then there is one can consider just the category of Cn without open subset and the category of Cn with open subset. One can compare these two conditions, the two definitions. But let me give a precise definition first. This is for the complex analytic version, and for the non-Archimedean analytic, we consider the full subcategory of Berkovich spaces spanned by, good Berkovich spaces, so separated, quasi-smooth, strictly, and paracompact. And let me say that there are many possible variations on this choice. One could choose a very different category. The resulting theory is always the same. And this is just particularly useful for our purposes. So the real definition of analytic ring is the following. I pick a structure. The structure shift will be a functor from this category Tn to X, and I ask it to preserve products and pull back along open immersions. And in fact, there is a more refined notion of local analytic ring, where I ask a third condition, which is I take open cover in Tn to effective epimorphism, just asking that the stalk are local rings. So I will refer to this pair as an analytic ring, the infinity topos. And whenever I give such an object, what I can do is I can forget this extra analytic structure to just to a sheaf of simplicial commutative algebras, which is just a way to say that I can forget this extra holomorphic functional calculus. The way it's done in practice is I pick this object and I just evaluate it on C, the analytic affine line. Okay, so this is a way to make precise the extra analytic structure we want to put on the structure sheaf. And once this is defined, we can give a definition of the derived analytic space, which is more correct than the one before. So a derived analytic space is an analytically ring space, XOX, such that when I truncate the structure sheaf and I take the underlying algebra, I just get a classical complex analytic space or a Berkovich space. And then I ask, as before, that the structure sheaves are coherent, the pi I are coherent as pi zero x modules. So this is the definition. One has to prove something with that. This theorem is due to Lurie in the complex case and to me and Tony Yu in the non-Archimedean setting. So first point is, one can really define an infinity category of derived analytic spaces. This category has fiber products. We have fully faithful embeddings of classical complex analytic space and Berkovich spaces in these derived versions. And finally, which seems pretty obvious, but it requires some work. If we know that XOX is a derived analytic space, I can truncate the structure sheaf and still get a derived complex analytic space. This is rather subtle because, this truncation functor doesn't commute with the limits, so one has to check that this composition is still an analytic ring.
Right, how are things graded in less or equal to zero then, or in all of C?
No, it's just simplicial. It's just simplicial. I'm working on. I have some idea how to extend it but it's not in shape to be announced in this moment. So.
So is there any Banachness in your definition, or is it only holomorphic functions composing with things?
I didn't get.
There's no Banach spaces in your definition.
No, no Banach space. Even though it's possible to compare the definition of Ben-Bassin and Kramnitz with this, but I don't know if there is an actual equivalence or not. I mean, it's possible to construct to every Banach algebra, one can associate an analytic ring in this sense. But I don't know if this functor is fully faithful or not for the moment. OK, so other questions? Yeah. So now this category of the right analytic space is defined. We established some basic properties. I turn to the comparison with the right algebraic geometry. So the first thing to do is to define analytification. So let me just recall you how Groth and Dickenser define a classical analytification. It's just by a universal property. So the analytification is the only, the unique locally ring space satisfying this universal mapping property. Where I see X, which is a scheme, as a locally ring space. So if I want to translate this in this new derived setting, I will have to replace this category with derived analytic spaces. And here, I mean, when I forget Y to, I cannot forget Y to a scheme. So here I will just put something like simplicially ring the topoi. So the key point is the following, this theorem of Lurie. So this is the starting point. If we have a derived scheme almost of finite type, then we can construct an analytically ring space. So by this, I mean the category of analytically ringed topo, in fact, satisfying this universal property. And then one can check that this object defined by these universal properties is actually a derived complex analytic space. And we have the non-Archimedean analog of this. OK, so this is what appears in DAG 9. That's more or less all which was proven before about derived complex analytic geometry. So the first thing to do is, of course, to check that this universal property coincides with the one of Grothendieck. And the next very important step is to check that the usual flatness of the analytification carries over in this derived setting. So by this I mean that I first take this analytification and then I forget. I keep the same topos and I pick the underlying sheaf of simplicial algebras of the analytification. And what I get is flat in the derived sense. So by this I mean on pi zero is flat, which is well known, and it's strong. So I can completely read the pi I of the analytification out of the analytification of pi zero and the pi I of the original scheme, which is something which is asserted in this. So if I have a push out where these two maps are square zero extension, then the analytification preserves this push out. So a priori, it goes in the wrong direction, but when f and g are square zero extension, it works. And as corollary of this third point, we have this concrete description of the analytification, the derived analytification. We just start with a derived scheme. We want to construct X analytified. So what do? We take its truncation. We analytify it as a classical scheme. And then we use the usual induction on the Postnikov tower to build up the analytification of the whole derived scheme. I mean, is it clear what I mean? Yeah, OK. OK, so having the analytification functor at our disposal, we can turn to the right version of Gaga theorems. So let me first give us the cheating definition. So we start with a derived complex analytic space. And we define OX modules just as modules on the underlying algebra. So I want to stress that here there is no analytic structure at all. It's just modules over the underlying sheaf of simplicial algebras. And I define coherent sheaves to be the full subcategory of OX modules spanned by those such module F such that, I mean, that cohomologically coherent. I don't require boundedness. I will put a plus or minus whenever is needed, or B whenever is needed. Okay, and another definition is, I will just say that a morphism in the right schemes or in the right complex analytic spaces is proper if the truncation is proper in the usual sense. And an important remark is that this definition can be carried over to stacks, at least the Lin-Manfort for stacks, even Artin stacks. I will explain later how to deal with the Artin stacks. And in fact, we did it in our previous paper with Tony. How to define properness for higher analytic geometric stacks. And we proved that the definition we gave is well behaved in the sense that we have a proper direct image and Grauer theorem. Yeah, and I mean, with this definition, it's trivial to show that the proper direct image theorem carries over to the derived setting for co plus, for example. Yeah. Okay, so the first Gaga theorem says that we can actually compute the direct image before or after analytification, and that doesn't change. Here, sorry, it's almost a finite type. And this theorem can be improved in the sense that if X and Y are really morphism of derived spaces, so the truncation is really a usual complex analytic space and not an orbifold, then one doesn't need to put plus here. But for I left this statement because in the papers, this is stated for general Artin stacks. This is the best I could do in that case. And the second Gaga theorem says that there is an equivalence between coherent sheaf on X and coherent sheaf on the analytification. And here, I really don't need any boundedness condition. Okay. Okay. So any question on Gaga? Okay, so let me turn to deformation theory. So the first question we have to ask ourselves is how to define the derived derivation in the analytic world, and how to define split square theory extension. So we proceed precisely as we do in usual derived algebraic geometry. So we prove the following theorem. We start with a derived analytic space, either complex analytic or k-analytic. And we have a forgetful functor that goes from analytic rings, sheaf of analytic rings over the structure sheaf, to sheaves of simplicial algebras over the underlying algebra of OX. This functor is conservative, but is not an equivalence. Nevertheless, when we go to the stabilization of, I mean, when we take stabilization, this becomes an equivalence. And we know that by a theorem of Lurie, I think, this side is just the category of modules over the underlying simplicial algebra of OX.
Is your K characteristic zero?
It's not needed. It's not needed. I mean, yeah, I mean, in...
There's a theorem stated in Lurie like this, but it's incorrect.
Oh, like this, you mean? Oh, I see.
It's a theorem in Lurie's thesis, but it's incorrect.
I see.
In that level of generality.
Okay, so this I didn't check, but
this... I'm only asking about that. Like,
yeah, this...
Sure,
okay,
no problem.
Then it's my fault.
You're talking about the difference between simplicity and infinity.
Yes.
I see.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks. For this side, we don't need. Yeah, but okay, good to know. Yeah, so let's say in characteristic zero, this is in any case quite surprising to me, because on this side, we do see some analytic structure. I mean, these are analytic objects, but after taking stabilization, the analytic structure completely disappears. Okay, so once one has this theorem In a sense, it's really easy to proceed. We just define an analytic derivation as a section of the canonical projection. So this split square zero extension is just the forgetful functor, the image of the forgetful functor going to analytic rings over OX. And the derivation, the section of the canonical projection are just the usual derived analytic derivations. So once we have a derived analytic derivation, we can define square zero extensions, and we can define the cotangent complex. Let me start with a brief discussion of square zero extension. So whenever we get, whenever we take an analytic derivation, so this is just a split square zero extension, we can consider this pullback and define this morphism to be the associated analytic square zero extension. And then we say that a morphism from O to OX is an analytic square zero extension if it arises via this construction. Okay, so this is a standard definition. There is something to prove, which is the morphism, the truncation morphism from truncation level n to truncation level n minus 1 is actually an analytic square zero extension of the truncation level n minus 1 by this module. I mean, it's expected, but it requires some work. Okay, so but this is a very important tool because, as in classical algebraic geometry, it will allow us to do induction on the Posnikov tower, which is what we do in the proof of the representability theorem all the time. Okay, so again on deformation theory, let me go to the analytic cotangent complex. So first of all, existence of the analytic cotangent complex not hard to establish. It's just a consequence of the general framework developed in higher algebra, and it's non-trivial. I mean, there is something to prove, but it's not hard to show that this analytic cotangent complex is always almost a finite presentation. So the cohomologies are coherent. And in fact, it's connect. I mean, in fact, it's always connected if I take objects which are orbifolds. Yes. Then, what about the properties and the computation of this analytic cotangent complex? So the first important property is that it's well behaved on the analytification. If I start with a morphism of the right scheme, so almost a finite presentation, then I have the classical analytic cotangent complex, and I can analytify it. And this is precisely the same thing as the analytic cotangent complex of the analytification. So this is useful in computation because it allows to reduce the computation of the analytic cotangent complex to a purely algebraic one. It's even more powerful when combined with this second statement, which is if X is a closed immersion in derived analytic spaces, then I can compute the analytic cotangent complex just in the purely algebraic way. By this, I mean I forget the structure shift of X and Y to plain simplicial algebras, and I compute the algebraic cotangent complex of the morphism, and I get the same thing. So since every complex, derived complex analytic space is locally, admits locally a closed immersion in some AN, I can always reduce the question of computing an analytic cotangent complex to a purely algebraic one. Purely algebraic one, I mean, I don't mean something of finite presentation over C, but just in terms of simplicial algebra, in the realm of simplicial algebras.
So and for proper
motions? No. This one?
Yeah.
No. Just closed immersions. And finally, we have the characterization of smooth morphism in terms of the cotangent complex. So a morphism is smooth if and only if the truncation is smooth and the analytic cotangent complex is perfect and in cohomological amplitude, in Tor amplitude zero. By that, I'm, for example, I can give you two. They are equivalent. The first is the truncation is smooth and the morphism is strong. Okay, or I can say that locally on x and y, it factors as an open immersion in y cross an followed by projection. And the two are, I mean, all these are equivalent. Okay. So finally, let me turn to Lurie's representability theorem in this analytic setting. So the first question we have to address is how do we define derived analytic Artinstax? And the answer is contained in the following theorem. So I just defined derived time spaces as those derived complex analytic spaces whose truncation is a classical time space. Then I have a well understood full subcategory of derived complex analytic spaces, which is equivalent to the Lehmann for stack with respect to this context. So this context is just derived time spaces with open topology, and I pick as Atlas's map et al. Morphisms, local Biot homomorphisms. And we have a non Archimedean counterpart of this. By this lock, I just mean the pairs where the topos is n-localic. By this, I mean sheaves on some n category. And the example you have to keep in mind is X will be the category of sheaves on the smooth et al. Site of an Artin stack.
So the left-hand side is derived analytic spaces, which would have no
all four
groups.
Yeah, it's a bad. Unfortunately, it's a bad notation and bad definition. I'm just sticking to what Doug Nine uses, but this is actually derived orbifolds, because pairs. I mean, objects here are a topos plus a structure sheaf, such that locally on the topos, it's of the form derived. I mean, the truncation is a usual derived complex analytic space. Complex analytic space.
So
the topos encodes the orbifold structure. Yeah, so but once this theorem is known, we can just allow more maps to be Atlas's map. So we can take smooth morphisms, and we get what I call derived analytic Artin stack, just geometric stack with respect to that context. And it's compatible thanks to the definition of the derived analytic space, thanks to this theorem. Yeah, so at this point, we can state Lurie representability theorem. So we start with the sheaf for the analytic topology, and the following conditions are equivalent. So first, F is geometric, and second, it satisfies the following four conditions. So the truncation is an analytic Artin stack, is a geometric stack with respect to the context, just usual Stein, open topology, and smooth morphism. F is convergent. By that, I mean that F commutes with the inverse limit of collimits of Postnikov towers. F is infinitesimally Cartesian. So it takes a push out along a closing, along a square zero extension to pull back. And it admits a global analytic cotangent complex. And so the work we did on the analytic cotangent complex allows to show this lemma. This was one of the points I started with. I mean, the first definition I gave of analytic derived analytic space had the problem that this lemma was false. And you see that this lemma trivially implies, I mean, it's closely related to the infinitesimally Cartesian condition. Yeah, so I still have some time. Do you have any question on this? So the way we want to apply this in with the Tony in practice will be to take F to be a mapping stack from the universal pre-stable curve to X cross the moduli stack of stable curves. And we know by the result of Tony that this first condition is satisfied. So it will be enough to check condition 2, 3, and 4 to get the right structure sheaf. And we are working on in this direction, but it's still not a theorem in this moment. Okay, so something about the near future direction. So this is what I was talking about. And then once the existence of this derived enhancement of the modulized stack of stable curves will be established, we plan to move on and try to construct some version of non-Archimedean quantum K theory. A second project I'm working on is how does the analytification functor behave on mapping stack, because this is tightly related with the derived Riemann-Hilbert correspondence, and so it relates to the derived non-abelian object structure project I was talking at the beginning. And finally, there is another project joint with François Petit, which is we are investigating how to obtain an analytic version of the HKR theorem by Toen and Vezzosi and Benvenal. I mean, at this point, more or less all the technical tools should be in place. I think we are missing something about non-connective analytic geometry. And that's why I was saying before that I'm thinking about how to deal with the problem. But I mean, these are just ongoing projects. And to complete, I just didn't know where to put them inside the talk. There are some additional results that I believe to be of interest. So the first one is we can control, if X is proper, we can control whether X is algebraizable or not, and it just depends on the truncation. This just follows from Gaga theorem and the good behavior of the analytical tangent complex on analytification. Again, related to Gaga theorem is this second point. So we can, if we start with any derived complex analytic space, then this, the shifted tangent complex admits a canonical structure of a BGB algebra. This I stated just on C because this really requires characteristic zero. And the idea of the proof is quite easy. One can define a deformation context as one does in derived algebraic geometry. The point is that analytic Artinian objects are just as category are just equivalent to algebraic one thanks to derived Gaga and good behavior of the analytical tangent complex. So this is just a trivial consequence of what I said before and the theorem of Lurie. And finally, the proper base change. Here I really require X and Y to be derived spaces and not orbifolds. So we have a proper map, and the canonical base change map is an equivalence for any coherent sheaf. So this this is trivial when either P or Q is a closed immersion, and then it's easy to reduce to the case of a closed immersion by checking on Stokes. This is basically the idea. I think I can stop here.
Okay, are there some questions?
Do you have an analytic version of PTVT?
I mean, that's it's a very good question. I think before we even start to go in that direction, we need to address this.
Can tell the ignorant among us what an HKR theorem is?
Because, Oschel constant Rosenberg. I mean, just saying that I can compute the rank homology via via Oschel homology. And I need at least for myself to get, like to get practice with to get used to this this notion. I think this is an interesting question on its own, and it goes in the direction of establishing the basic foundational background for PTVV. I mean, to define closed forms and...
Can you just write down the definitions anyway? I mean, do you have a
I bet you can.
And Durand differential and so on.
Yeah, I think you can. But I never, I mean, I never talked to, I never thought to that. I never tried to prove, for example, AKSZ in this setting.
If you do it like PTVV do it, at some point have an image to define a Chern character of some kind of universal sheaf. And
well,
either
if you want the result for perf, yes, but
if you just want it for VG,
yeah,
the HKR for any of that anyway.
Oh, but for perf it shouldn't be too hard, because the analytic perf is the analytification of the algebraic one.
But then you would anyway need some for that third point here. That's the only place where you use the HKR theorem and
yeah, okay.
PTVV.
But yeah, I mean, all these properties should be have very well under analytification. So if I have whatever is a shifted Poisson structure in the analytic setting, if I have it on the algebraic category, I should have it also on the analytification. So for perf, it should follow from the algebraic statement. But one still has to write down the definition and check that.
Other questions? Okay, let's take Margaret.